It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll learn about a Wisconsinite who took part in the Freedom Rides of the Civil Rights era. First, the Trump administration announced this week that it will levy tariffs on steel and aluminum from Canada, Mexico, and the European Union. At midnight, the U.S. government instated a 25% tariff on foreign steel and a 10% tariff on aluminum imports. Canada and the EU were swift in their retaliation, putting in place tariffs of their own against U.S. exports. Mark Koplovich is an associate professor of political science and public affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me again.
We've talked about this before when these tariffs were first previewed and then postponed. What is the reasoning that the Trump administration has given for these steel and aluminum tariffs?
Yes. So the reasoning is, ironically, it's about national security, right? And the irony is that they're targeted 98% of these tariffs to our main allies, Canada, Mexico, the EU, South Korea. Congress for decades has delegated a lot of trade policy, extensive trade policy, to the president. And this is all under Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act of 1962, which gives the president broad authority to impose tariffs and other forms of protection in cases where there is a risk to American national security. And that's a really wide loophole, right? There's also one of the Article 21 of the GATT World Trade Organization agreements, the sort of multilateral trade body, also allows an opt-out for national security. And this is something that's been used very, very rarely because it's a huge loophole, right? If you can invoke national security for trade protection, then you can pretty much do anything. But the justification is that there's a flood of steel and aluminum coming in and that that's a risk to American national security.
The reality is it seems like this is a trade measure, not a national security measure. The idea is this will help protect American steel and aluminum producers from foreign competition. Does it do that? Is this going to help the steel industry, the aluminum industry in America?
Probably not in overall, right? I mean, the problem is, and it's one of the things we've spoken about before, is most supply chains are global now. Most American manufacturers are both importers and exporters. And so there might be some jobs that are saved. The numbers I've seen in the last 24 hours are that there's going to be a net of between 200,000 and 600,000 jobs lost, and actually a hit to the steel sector. You're raising prices, right? 10 to 25% on steel and aluminum, which are major inputs. So even if that would increase domestic steel production, it's going to make it much more expensive for manufacturers to consume steel, right? And so the demand for steel is going to go down in the United States. And the net effect then on employment and production in the steel sector and aluminum sector itself, it's unclear.
Let's look downstream now at the companies that use steel and aluminum. A lot of companies weighing in on this, worried about costs. To pick one example, Harley-Davidson, obviously a strong Wisconsin connection, saying, we use these things. This is going to raise our input costs.
Yeah. So there's the direct, right? The input costs are going to go up, and that's going to increase the cost of production. We're going to have to raise prices on our products. Demand is going to go down. The indirect worry is there's going to be retaliation, right? So the other reason Harley-Davidson is worried and American whiskey producers are worried is the Canadians and the European Union now are saying, right, these tariffs are illegal, right? These tariffs are not about national security. And in order to get the U.S. to back down, we're going to match them with retaliatory tariffs. And that's going to hurt overseas sales.
Can you talk a little more about what kind of responses we're seeing from Canada, Mexico, the European Union when it comes to tariffs in response?
Yeah. So, first thing is to think about these are our largest trading partners, right? So we have $700 billion or $720 billion in trade with the EU, Mexico and Canada. It's over a trillion. We trade more with them than we do with China, right? And what we're talking about, the Canadians said, Chrystia Freeland, who's the foreign minister yesterday, said that there's going to be $12.8 billion in retaliatory tariffs on U.S. imports into Canada. I believe the number in the European case that the European Trade Commissioner, Cecilia Malmström, said there's going to be about $7.5 billion. And they're targeted to be politically sensitive, right? So you're going to try and hit Harley-Davidson or whiskey producers in Kentucky because maybe these are politically sensitive sectors that are going to lobby the Trump administration to back down.
But these things are going to have similar effects on those countries, right? The tariffs will raise costs for them. It seems like a trade war is we stand, look at each other and shoot ourselves in the foot and see who bleeds faster.
Yeah, so the, you know, the line that Trump had is trade wars are good and easy to win, right? And what history tells us is that trade wars are bad, and you get into this downward spiral of retaliatory tariffs. What does that do? It raises cost of production for producers in both countries. It raises the prices of goods for consumers. And in the end, it's not clear. And, you know, the thing with trade is, with free trade, there are distributional consequences. There are some sectors and firms that are going to win and lose. But overall, everybody benefits from trade. And so we're basically playing that game in reverse, where American consumers are going to lose, European consumers are going to lose, and the manufacturers that are both exporters and importers on both sides of the border are also going to lose.
Talking to Mark Koplovich from UW-Madison about the tariffs just went into effect on steel and aluminum from places like Canada, Mexico, and the European Union. I want to key in on Canada now and give a listen to Justin Trudeau up in Canada saying the Canadian government doesn't blame the American people for the actions of the administration. Here's a little bit of what he said about our relationship.
From the beaches of Normandy to the mountains of Afghanistan, we have fought and died together. Canadian personnel are serving alongside Americans at this very moment. We are partners in NORAD, NATO, and around the world. We came to America's aid after 9/11, as Americans have come to our aid in the past, and we're fighting together against Daesh in northern Iraq. The numbers are clear. The United States has a $2 billion U.S. dollar surplus in steel trade with Canada. And Canada buys more American steel than any other country in the world. Indeed, we account for half of U.S. exports, U.S. steel exports. Canada is a secure supplier of aluminum and steel to the U.S. defense industry, putting aluminum in American planes and steel in American tanks. That Canada could be considered a national security threat to the United States is inconceivable.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau there. A lot there, Mark. What do you take away from that?
Yeah, I mean, it is inconceivable. I mean, in terms of our relationship with Canada, trade, security, they are probably our closest ally. And the difficulty for them is we are their largest trading partner. They are, a small country relative to us and very dependent on trade in a way that we trade a lot with the EU and China and other countries. We're not as dependent. But the bilateral relationship, I mean, it's the closest geopolitical and economic relationship we have. It's the longest undefended border in the world, essentially. It's very clear that there is a political story behind the tariffs, and it's not about national security.
And he mentioned there the U.S. actually has a trade surplus when it comes to steel with Canada. Also, according to the way the American government calculates it, we have a trade surplus with Canada, not a deficit. The Canadians find a little bit different, but it's close either way you slice it.
Yeah, I mean, it depends how you measure it. If you factor in only goods, if you factor in services, the two economies are so deeply enmeshed, not just in imports and exports, but again, in terms of cross-border value chains of production, right? I mean, since we've had NAFTA in the 1990s, the American auto industry has reoriented its production, right, to be producing simultaneously in Mexico, Canada, and the United States. And more or less, we're talking about one economy in the 21st century. And so, the idea that this is about national security and that we're targeting China, what we're seeing is these are our largest trading partners. These are also our NATO allies. I mean, the central military alliance we have since the 1940s is with the Western European countries and Canada. And as Trudeau was talking about, right, the military equipment that is at the heart of that alliance uses steel from Canada, from Germany, from the United States. So there are real geopolitical consequences. But I also think you hear in his tone, we've been fighting trade disputes with Canada for decades, right? But they're sort of friendly trade disputes and they go on and we resolve them through NAFTA, through the WTO. The tone that you hear with Trudeau and with Chrystia Freeland now, it's a very different tone of, we're not getting anywhere with these negotiations, and we really need to kind of take action now.
Yeah, let's talk more about NAFTA, because part of the deal with delaying these tariffs initially was, hey, let's see if we can get, we, the United States, can get the deal we want with Canada and Mexico and NAFTA, and then maybe we can take these off the table. Prime Minister Trudeau said that he was working on having a meeting with President Trump. He heard from, he says, Vice President Pence saying, you can have that meeting if you agree to a 5-year sunset clause. These things expire unless we agree to keep them going. That was a deal breaker, apparently. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's so it's just not how international trade agreements work. So, you know, we sign international trade agreements to create certainty about the rules of the game in the future. And NAFTA is a permanent treaty, right? There are ways to back out of it, but the idea is we have made this commitment, and that sets the rules of the game for the trade in the future. So we're talking about renegotiating NAFTA. The current NAFTA doesn't expire, right? The U.S. has a preference to renegotiate, but the current NAFTA is in place. So effectively what the U.S. is asking for is for the Canadians to say, we're going to replace the permanent NAFTA with a temporary NAFTA, and that creates massive uncertainty in international trade, because now not only will the current NAFTA not be in place, but we might have new rules. And after 5 years, the Trump administration or a future administration might walk away from this deal. You know, that's the exact opposite of what the purpose of these international negotiations are supposed to be, which is to update an existing treaty.
As we wrap up, there's talk of automotive tariffs now on various cars from various places. What happens when a car is assembled in Canada out of parts made in Mexico using specialty steel from the United States, or assembled in the United States with parts from other countries? Is that a foreign car?
It's very difficult, right? And there are international trade lawyers who make lots of money trying to disentangle these things. But in that specific example, the car is a NAFTA car, right? So it should be tariff-free, being within the free trade zone of North America. The more difficult cases are, say, like, you know, German automobiles. So some of them are now made, right, Mercedes and BMW are making cars down in, I believe, Tennessee and Alabama. Those are effectively American cars because they're produced here and sold here. But some of the cars are produced in the EU and then they're brought over. And so when we think about auto tariffs, right, what you're really talking about is Japanese cars that are exported from Japan to the United States, or German cars that are coming from Germany into the United States. But it's a difficult question, right? What is an American corporation? What is an American good? That's the problem with these global value changes. Corporations these days are producing and sourcing from all over the world. And the Trump administration's obsession with bilateral deficits doesn't really fit the way the global economy works today.
Mark, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me again.
Mark Koplovich is an associate professor of political science and public affairs at UW-Madison. He's with us to talk about the new steel and aluminum tariffs targeting Canada, Mexico, and the European Union.